actually, I actually had thought that we would end last week before Alina went away, and then I said, well, that's not nice to end the class on the way. So we continued. You know, sort of the end of Perek Yud Aleph is an end in the sense that, as we saw last week, Shaul is now recognized by everybody. We did an extra coronation, and the whole discussion that we had, why do we have a new coronation? You know, the importance, as we said from Ralbag, you need the visual. It has to be made real. We have this extra week. So what we're going to do is two pieces. Number one is we'll talk about the lessons that we learned from this parak, from Perek Yud Aleph, from chapter 11, about Shaul. Because I think that there are some important points that we've now seen that are worth discussing. And then we'll do the first part of Perek Yud Bet, of chapter 12, because that's really its own unit, as we'll see. So that's the way that we're going to approach it. And the learning should be for a Refuah Shlema for Elio ben Yakar ben Chanadora. Okay. So, first lesson regarding Shaul is about leadership. Right? We pointed out when we started the parak, the history of Yavesh Gilad, which he wants to go save. And he rallies the people to save Yavesh Gilad, even though Yavesh Gilad has a terrible reputation. Those are the people who betrayed everybody at a time of Pilegesh B'Givah. Everybody was told, you have to come to war, and they chose not to go, and of course then you have this war against them, and they got massacred. But Shaul says, you can't leave them. You can't abandon them. This is a requirement, no matter what they've done wrong. Something that actually Shmuel is going to echo at the end of Perek Yud Bet. We won't get there today. But at the end of Perek Yud Bet, the people are going to ask Shmuel to daven for them. And he's going to say, no matter what you've done wrong, I'm still going to daven for you. That's the way that Shaul says, we're going to fight on behalf of Yavesh Gilad, in Perek Yud Aleph. Ralbag adds a level to this. If you take a look at source number one of Ralbag's lessons on this section, if you add nicely. Yes. So look at Ralbag. He says, his 20th lesson on this segment, Shera'oi shatiya l'shalem midas ha'gevura b'mekamos ha're'uyim la'atzil l'nirdafim shei me'amo. It is appropriate for somebody who is shalem, somebody who is complete, that he should have the trait of strength, of might, that when the time is right, he will act to save members of his nation who are being pursued. So it talks about either pa'alot, I suppose I translated originally his actions, it could be his motivation to action, it doesn't really matter for our purposes, but it mentions Shaul's activism regarding Nachash. Right, even though the Jews don't even see him as a king. He could have legitimately said, who am I? I just look after the cattle. He didn't conduct himself as a king. He could have legitimately said, I don't know why you're talking to me about this. I'm just a guy. They came to him, right? In Pasuk Dalet, they came to him. But he could have said no, and he did, not. He instead rallied them. So that's a leadership point regarding Shaul, that even though he has been rejected, and even though Yavesh Gilad is not this popular cause, nonetheless, he rallies the people to help them. That's number one. Number two is Shaul's relationship with Hashem. He is, as we've noted, a servant of God. When he rallied the nation to war, right, he didn't just rally in his own name, but he credited Shmuel. And when they won, he credited Hashem. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, right, Hayom Asah Hashem Tshuah B'Yisrael. Hashem is the one who has saved the nation. He is a servant of God, and he acknowledges that. And he also is somebody who receives help from Hashem in this parak. Professor Eli Tzur in the Da'at Mikra notes it in source number two. He says, this parak adds an important note. Where it says summary after paragraph 20 in the heading, it shouldn't say 20, it should say 12. Sipur ha-maaseh ba-kan kedei l'shamesh ho-chacha ki zacha sha'ul lo rak l'ruach Hashem ruach nevuah elagam ruach itza'u gvurah. This parak shows us that Sha'ul does not only have the spirit of God, meaning he's a prophet that we saw previously, but he is also somebody who is given itza'u gvurah, that he is able to lead the battle against Ammon with all the strategy involved, with all the strength that's involved. That's also a part of his identity. So his close relationship with Hashem is a second important component. Clear? Third component is mercy. And here we get a very interesting contrast between Nachash and Sha'ul. Right? Nachash is cruel. He has zero to gain by the man that they put out their eyes, right? I did see in the Halbertal book, he points out that a person who has had his eye put out is probably not going to be a good warrior. So there is, to a certain extent, some subjugation involved. They're never going to be a threat to him again. But on the balance, it's taken as a demonstration of cruelty, this demand. And in fact, it's actually reminiscent of something from the era of the Mabul, right? The people of the Mabul, the people of that era, the ones who Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. So the Torah characterizes their main sin as chamas. Chamas, usually understood as violent theft. But the Medrash distinguishes between this and theft by saying chamas is where you steal less than a pruta. Pruta is the most minimal coin. Right? In terms of silver, you could argue it's somewhere around a nickel in Canadian currency. So 4 cents, 5 cents Canadian, meaning negative cents US. So that's a pruta. People would steal even less than that.
The same Hamas as our friends Hamas?
Well, it depends who you ask. But it's the same word.
It's the same.
I don't know what it is in Arabic. But it's different because it's based on a certain quantity of silver. That's how you know what it is. So it's half a barley kernel volume of silver. You know, and check out the other market rates, and you'll be able to figure out what it's worth. But it's tiny. The Mabul is, why are you stealing that from somebody? It's worthless. Why would you steal? So you could say it's stealing for the sake of stealing, right? That's one way to look at it. But another way to look at it, and we discussed this at the time when we did the Medrash on Parshas Noach, is that it's not about you gaining something, it's about harming the other guy. It doesn't help you.
It shows
you're powerful and they're not, and it takes them down. Because when everybody comes along and steals in this way, that person is going to suffer for it, the person from whom you steal. Ralbag highlights the cruelty in source number 3. He says, lesson 19 out of this section, She'ein ro'oi lihitnaheg v'midat ha'achzariyut. One of the things we learn here is that cruelty does not pay. What do you mean? Had Nachash let well enough be, the people came to him and said, we concede, we'll give in, we'll pay you whatever you want, we'll work for you, we'll be your slaves. Had he stopped there, he would have ruled Yavesh Gilad. But he didn't want to make a deal with them, not unless they put out every right eye. And as a result of his cruelty, what did he cause? He caused them to fall to Israel, and Ammon got hurt.
The people suffered anyways because they suffered in the war.
The people of Ammon, not Yavesh.
Yavesh
is fine. That's always true. But often. So that's Nachash. He is cruel to his own detriment. Whereas Sha'ul is merciful, even when he has something to gain via cruelty. Right? If you, I gave you a reference here in 4 and 5 to a double story from Shoftim. In Shoftim Perekhet, we're talking about Gidon as the leader. And Gideon rallies the Jews against Midian. And after he has defeated Midian, look what happens in source number 4. Vayomru elav ish Ephraim, the people of Ephraim say to Gidon, Ma davar hazeh asisa lanu? What did you do to us? Levelti kros lanu. You didn't call us. Ki alachta li lachim b'midyan. You went to fight a war against Midian. You didn't call us. Vayomru tov b'chazka. And they give him a really hard time. Vayomer alayhem, and Gidon says back to them, what have I done that's the equal of you? You're so amazing. Olalot are when you pick grapes, the individual lone grapes, as opposed to the ones that grow in nice bunches. And the rule, in fact, is that when you're harvesting grapes, you have to leave those for the aniyim. You have to leave them for the needy. You can't take them yourself. You get the nice ones that, like, on the Kedem bottle, the ones that, you know, have a perfect grape bunch structure. So he says, your reject grapes, right, the Olalot of Ephraim, are better than the entire grape harvest of my family, of Abiezer. Abiezer is from Menashe, and that's where Gidon is from. So the message here is that, what does Gidon do? Gidon is diplomatic, right? The people are angry. He compliments them. He doesn't want to fight. Contrast that with source number 5. This is Yiftach. Yiftach also had a war. He came back from the war very successful. And then he fought against Ammon. Vayitzaik ish Ephraim. The people of Ephraim rallied. Vayavor tzafona, they went north. Vayamru Yiftach, and they said to Yiftach, Madua avardi lachem b'vnei Ammon v'lanu lo karas alechas imach. Why didn't you call us when you went to war against Ammon? Beislan Yisroel falach habayish, we're going to burn your house down. So there. Vayomer Yiftach aleihem. Yiftach says to them, Ish riv hayisi ani ve'ami u'bnei Ammon me'od. You know, I had a hard fight with Ammon. And he says, Va'ezahak eschem, and I did call you. V'lohoshatem osim yodam, and you didn't save me. Meaning, where you been? I summoned everybody. And I saw you weren't helping. So what did I do? I took my life in my own hands. And I crossed the river to go fight Bnei Ammon. God put them in my hands. Why are you starting up with me? I'm not taking anything from you, Ephraim. I don't care what Gideon did. And by both Yiftach's call and Sheikh Gilad, Yiftach gathers all the people of Gilad, but Yilachem as Ephraim, and he goes to war against this Jewish tribe, against Ephraim. But Akuan Sheikh Gilad is Ephraim, Ki Amru Pleitei, Ephraim Atem Gilad, Besoch Ephraim, Besoch Manasseh, that's a whole other thing, that pasuk. When we learned that in Shoftim, that was a very hard pasuk to translate. But that's the whole Sibolet story, where they can figure out who's from Ephraim because of their pronunciation. It's the opposite of the reaction of Gidon. So you could try to say maybe the circumstances were different, that's why their answers were different. My point is that Shaul is much more like Gidon than he is like Yiftach. Because when the people rejected Shaul, he said, all right, fine, I'm going home. He didn't make a big deal out of it. And then we saw in Perek Yud Aleph that when people rallied to support Shaul after he defeated Ammon, right? Not unlike Yiftach, who defeated Ammon. When Shaul defeats Ammon, and then they say, whoever doesn't accept the reign of Shaul, we should put him to death, right? Shaul's response is, let go. Just let it go. Shaul does not press the advantage. Now, the truth of the matter is that this mercy may come back to bite him. He is going to spare something from Amalek. It will be possible to read it as sparing it because of mercy, although that's not the only read. We have to see that when we get there. That's Perek Tetvav. So, we have a while. But if, in fact, his reason for sparing them is mercy, then it could be that his mercy isn't always the right answer, maybe misplaced, correct. And that leads me to the last trait of Shaul that I want to talk about in this summary, which is his humility. We saw Shaul's humility 3 times. Number one, when he hid, I didn't think about it. The truth is, you can go back further, like the way he conducts himself with the servant. You could argue that we have even more opportunities. But we saw that he hid when they tried to coronate him. Then, when he was coronated and people didn't accept him, so he says, all right, fine, I'm going home. And then, in Parakeet Aleph, when again, they want to kill the people who rejected him, he says, let them be. It's not just mercy, it's also bless you. It's also seen as humility. And it's presented in contrast again with Nahash. Right? Nahash is arrogant. Shaul is humble. However, Shaul's humility is not so clear-cut.
It's not so
clear-cut. It's not so obvious that this is actually a good trait. Take a look, please, at source number 6. Classic Gemara in Kiddushin. Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, Melech shemachal al kvodo, ein kvodo mahu. Certain people are accorded special status in the Torah. Mm-hmm. Halacha says they have to be respected. A parent, for example, kabed es avicha v'esimecha, right? However, a parent is allowed to be mochal on their kavod, is allowed to forgive their honor. The parent is allowed to say, yeah, that's okay, it doesn't bother me. I don't need that particular kavod from you. So the child has an obligation to escort the parent out. The parent says, it's all right, you don't need to. A melech, though, a king, it's not up to him. He's not allowed to forgive his honor. Shneamar, uvnei belial amru, mayoshiye. I'm sorry, I jumped into number 7. Back at number 6. Enkvod machul, shneamar, som tasim alecha melech, because the Torah says, you shall place a king over you, shetehei imasa alecha. You have to revere the king. It's not up to the king to say, I don't want it. That's the mitzvah. If you're going to have a king, this is the way you have a king. We talked about whether having a king is a mitzvah at all. That was a while back.
Ematcha is also fear.
Yeah, right. I go back and forth between fear, awe, reverence, but it's clear that there's an honor that is due to the king, and it's not up to the king. It's about the position the king occupies. It's not about his personal feelings. So, yeah, he's representative of Hashem, however you read it. But now, contrast that with Shaul's behavior. Right, Shaul is not so concerned about his honor. And in fact, the Gemara in Yuma picks up on it in source number 7, as explained there by Rashi. Rav Yehuda Marav. Rav Yehuda quoted Rav. Mipnei ma nenash Shaul. Why was Shaul punished? Mipnei shemachal al kivodo. Because he forgave his honor. Where did we see that? Shneamar uvnei belial amru mayoshienu zeh. Right, these wicked people or these worthless people said, "Who is him? Who is he? He's going to rule over us. He's going to save us." Vayikem acharish, and he's quiet. Uchsiv, and then what happened? Vayal nachash amoni vayichan al yavesh gilad. Nachash attacks yavesh gilad. Now, how does that show that he got punished? Unclear to me, but it's a good thing I have Rashi. So Rashi explains. In still number 7, Umaskana de Milsa, the conclusion of the matter was, Sha'amru Yisrael miha omer Shaul yimloch aleinu. The people said, who is it who says Shaul can't rule over us? Bitliya, an expression of surprise. For someone to say, is Shaul going to rule over us? Tenuha anashim unimisim. Give us these men and we will kill them. Vahu amar lo yumasa ish hayom hazeh, and Shaul said, nobody shall die on that day. So the statement here is that he is punished. I'm trying to remember now how this flows. He ends up being punished because of the humility that he displayed. But where is the punishment here then? I remember going through this and figuring it out.
Now
I
remember going to figure it out. When he
later on.
Yeah.
Is it the punishment later?
Yeah, but the question is what the how does that emerge from this Gemara? It did emerge from the Gemara. I'm trying to remember how. And I thought Rashi was the one who gave it. I think the answer has to be that I'll have to go back and take a look, but I think the answer was simply that because he forgave his honor in the first place, he didn't say anything. The result was the attack of Nachash HaAmoni, and and that led him to this further act of humility. No one shall die on this day. And that, yes, as a result of having done that, later on, he would end up losing the throne. That's the way that it's taken. Diane.
But now we have a king like Yerobam, who is not humble. Mm-hmm. And he also gets punished. He's also not humble to his kingdom.
Correct.
And yet, so what's the point? Rather be Shaul than be Yerobam.
So I'll add to that. Take a look at source number 8. Source number 8 is actually, as I noted on your page, the line in the Gemara right before source number 7. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda quotes Shmuel. Mipnei malo nimshcha malchus beis Shaul. Why didn't Shaul's reign last? Mipnei shalo haya bo shum dofi. Because he had no flaw. He's too perfect. The Amar of Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. We often have this problem. The Amar of Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon quotes. Sorry, Rabbi Yochanan quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak to say, "Ein ma'midin parnas al hatzibur elam kein kupa shal shratzim tzluya lo me'achorav." You don't appoint somebody as the leader, the parnas for the community, unless he has a box of creepy crawly creatures hanging behind him. Shem tazuach daito alav, so that if he gets arrogant, omrim lo chazor la'achoracha, they say, look behind you. In other words, everyone should have a skeleton. That's the
so
idea. There should be something.
Keep people humble.
So that every time you do something that annoys people, they're going to remind you. Remember this element of your past. So now consider, though, Shaul's problem is he has nothing to keep him humble, according to this line in the Gemara.
Yes, he is.
And that's that's the question here. Is it because he was too humble, or is it he wasn't humble enough? And not only that, I don't know if you noticed it, but who was the author of the statement in source number 7?
Rav
Yehuda quoting Rav. And the author in number 8 is Rav Yehuda quoting Shmuel. Rav Yehuda was one of the rare Amoraim, sages of the time of the Gemara, who had Rebbeim, who were sparring partners, so to speak. Meaning Rav ran one yeshiva, Shmuel ran a different yeshiva, and they debate across the Gemara. Rav Yehuda spent time in the yeshiva of Rav, and spent time in the yeshiva of Shmuel, and sometimes he quotes one, and sometimes he quotes the other. And here, he quotes, tweeted in the order in which we read it, which is the opposite of the order of the Gemara. He quotes Rav to say, Shaul's problem was that he was too humble, and he quotes Shmuel to say his problem was that he wasn't humble enough. Yeah. It's clear what does emerge. However we understand Shaul personally, what is emerging here is a complex picture of what we want from a leader. And if you flip to source number 9, Ralbag, thinks we are supposed to learn humility from here. He says, lesson 17 from this section, She'ein ra'oi l'shalem, she'yispa'el mima she'yomru ha'anashim kinegdo. He says, a person who is complete, the person who is perfect, should not be moved to action by what people say against him. Right? Don't let them force you to do something. Kol she'ein she'yispa'el lo yechabdu. And certainly he should not be moved to action if they just disrespect him. You should endure it. And that's why it says that Shaul didn't respond. In other words, he's being a model. You're not supposed, he was right for being humble. In fact, they didn't bring him a gift. Even though it would have been fitting for them to bring it to him. So Ralbag says humility was an important trait, an effective trait, and a good trait for him. Interestingly, Malvin goes the other way and says, no, he's not the king yet, and that's why he can forgive the honor. Had he been king, this would have been the wrong trait. So what do you do with this trait of Shaul? Leadership, check. Relationship with Hashem, check. Mercy seems good, although let's see what happens with Amalek. But the humility piece of Shaul is a lot more complicated. So to me, the message is that, you know, what you could have predicted, which is that humility has to be used in balance, and certainly for a leader. You know, the Rambam has the line of Ma'od, well, back a step. Pirkei Avos says, Ma'od, Ma'od, Havei Shfal Ruach. You have to be very, very humble. can't be at all arrogant. And the Rambam takes that. The Rambam talks about personality. He says, in all traits, you walk the Aristotelian golden mean, be in the middle, except for two. Possible third, but go stick with the two. The number one, he says, is anger. He says you have to eliminate all anger. And even if anger is needed as a display, make sure it's only a display. If, right, the children are the classic example. Sometimes a child has to understand this behavior is absolutely intolerable. You may need to make a show of anger, but you can't feel it. Good luck. That's number one. And number two is arrogance. He says you have to crush that entirely. But when you're dealing with a leader, that's a different story. The leader is going to need some level of non-humility. And I'd like to be able to come up with a clear delineation of where it's desirable, where it's not. You know, he should forgive his own honor, but not forgive the honor of God, or something like that. But as you read through it, it's really hard to find a clear distinction, because we don't even know, in some of the cases, was it really humility that was acting at all. So it's hard to make that kind of distinction. But what we're getting here is that Shaul is complicated. The humility piece is not so simple and straightforward, to the point where we have one view in the Gemara that's willing to say that he was not humble, and that's why he got punished. And we have another view in the Gemara that says he was too humble, and that's why he got punished. I mean, that's a true Jewish leader, right? You take it on both sides.
And also you have to act according to the situation. Though.
Yes, absolutely.
And also it's different to be humble for yourself, as opposed to being humble for the position.
Yeah.
Like, if he has to defend the position of being the king. Mm-hmm. He can't forego that. His own personal feelings, he can...
Right, but my problem with it is that it's hard to really see that in these scenarios, to see where he's acting on his own. And it doesn't really work well, and I think to the observer, random Jew who sees Shaul, it's not clear at all when he's doing one and when he's doing the other. I think this is not straightforward. I think Shaul is complicated, which is okay. All right. That's the piece on Shaul's traits that we can learn from the Prakim that we've already seen. We have an understanding of who this king is now. So...